Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Paranexus Universe. Today is Thursday, September 10th, 2009. This is Doug Kelly. I'm here with Grant Rubendus.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's nice to have tonight.
Yes, indeed. Boy, the year is going so fast, and we're getting close to our 80th show, I think. I think that's coming up. Yeah, a lot of shows, so a lot of stuff going on here. Wanted to update everybody. We are in the process of sending off our articles of incorporation for Paranexus, which is kind of an exciting time. We're going to send them off tomorrow, and we should get them back, I'm sure, in a few days, less than a week. And so we'll announce when that's done. And then the next step is to go on to applying for 501c3 status with the IRS to be an exempt nonprofit, tax-exempt nonprofit. That's going to open up a lot of opportunities, I think, especially for people who want to donate and get the tax deduction. So, you know, this is actually a monumental step that Paranexus has taken. I mean, we're a year and a half old and a lot. You know, it's been slow growth, but it's been growth. And we've made a lot of changes and enhancements and evolution. And so, you know, I'm just excited that it's come to this point and continue to go on. And the cool thing about becoming a nonprofit, you know, legally, is that it really shows, in my opinion, our commitment to future Paranexus and to what it stands for, because I do believe we have an approach that's unique. I mean, there are others with it, but it stands out, and in terms of investigating the and paranormal phenomena. And so it's a good thing that it will continue on way past me and way past Grant. Right, Grant?
Oh, absolutely, Doug.
So we,
no doubt about it. It's exciting. And you know, we're not in it for the money. We're in it for the research, and this is going to give us the best opportunity. And as we grow, there's going to be opportunities for the folks in the audience who've been with us for a while. And a lot of our successes, you know, of course, thanks to them and our, and our members. And, you know, you know, I would encourage everybody to look towards you know, our website and look for opportunities, because we're looking for good qualified folks to come and join us.
Yeah, we are, and you know, there are now going to be even more opportunities, because once we get our 501c3 status, we'll be in a position to apply for government grants and other grants from other nonprofits, and that'll help with the funding, because that's always been the biggest challenge, and it's the same challenge with any nonprofit. Raising funds and trying to get the working capital to do something. And so, you know, we've operated on a shoestring since our inception. And, you know, we don't have a lot of expenses right now, which is great, but we do need working capital to get the job done. One of the things we'd like to be able to do is to award grants, research to different groups who, you know, want to go check something out or do some research in a particular area. So we hope to do that. The opportunities, though, is, you know, we're going to be good people. I mean, we need good people on staff. We're going to be looking for more board members over the next few months. And this is a great opportunity for our members to get into Paranexus, to, you know, log in, go to the forums and post. Show us who you are. Let us get to know you. looking for competent, solid, grounded people who would like to board or join us. We've got openings for public relations person, people who have some experience with fundraising. We're looking for people with experience in accounting, people with experience in legal work. And that's in addition to the other academics and professionals that, you know, we're always looking for. So people can, if they wish, and if you have any questions, you're more than welcome to email us at admin@paranexus.org. So get in there and show us who you are and let us get to know you and join in. We're fixing
exciting times ahead.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that having been said, we are going to get to our guest. We have our new newsletter editor, Dave Desjardins. I got to say that more. It was like the key.
Very good.
Hey, welcome, Dave.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it's nice to have you on the show.
Thanks, Grant. Evening to everybody in the chat room.
Yeah, we've got a few people. So tonight we're going to be talking about things. Of course, Dave's got his group up in the Great White North there, Canada. What's the name of your group again, Dave?
Eastern Ontario Paranormal Investigations and Consultation.
For sure. What do you
mean? EOPIC, for sure, yeah.
Different than myopic, right?
A little bit different.
Quite a bit. Quite a bit different, I suspect.
And if you Google EOPIC wrong, it comes up with some Eastern pandemic. it can get quite embarrassing.
That's better than a porn site, huh?
That's true.
So, well, put your link in. Of course, people can find Dave on paranexus.org. You know, Dave's been with us, a couple of weeks now or so, and taking over the last letters and done a great job. I've told him I've taken a great load off, and I'm just so happy that somebody can help with that who's confident, skilled, and it'll only get better. You're doing great.
Thank you. I said a couple times, it's a living organism on its own, so it's, you know, it can only continue to grow, and with some membership feedback, and once I get people writing, whether they have writing skills or not, you know, we can use anything. If somebody has something to say or wants to say something or is passionate about a topic, send it my way.
Yeah, this is your opportunity to encourage people to write. If you got something, send it in to Dave and let's get it in the news. And if you've got ideas, you know, we're open to it too. So,
yeah, and don't be shy either, because, you know, the bottom line is, folks, it's not everybody is very genius, and we all acknowledge that. So don't let that fear, you know, stop you from making a contribution, because your voice is just as important as anybody else's out there, and what you may have might be unique. So
absolutely.
Feel free to share with us.
So like I said in my last editor's corner there, I mean, everybody is an educator as well as a student. Everybody has something to offer.
Absolutely.
So, Dave, you've mentioned to me a couple of times in our conversations that the perception of the paranormal is a little bit different in Canada. Could you tell us about that? How is it different?
Well, I'm going to throw out the caveat here, the press and the following comment. strictly those of me. But it's been my experience and observation that things are somewhat prudish when it comes to the topic of the paranormal. I've had the opportunity to travel quite a bit, and I've talked to different people, different cultures, to find out more about their belief systems, their mythology, their cultural processes, and they're, for the most part, majority of the the cultures, whether it's Honduran, Croatian, German, American, they're much more open to the topic of paranormal, ufology, cryptozoology. It's an accepted norm for them. You talk about it in Canada, and you might as well get a toaster on your head.
That'd look funny,
for lack of a better analogy.
Maybe a tin hat. You should walk around with a tin hat.
Yeah. Aluminum foil hat.
Mm-hmm.
Aluminum foil hat's the only thing that'll ward off those schizophrenic impulses.
I've seen
evil spirits
downtown.
Yeah. But do you think that comes from, like, the practicality of, like, you know, I mean, I'm originally from Michigan, and we were, like, you know, your next-door neighbor up there, and I think that, you know, folks that they are, most in the Midwest and northern part of our country, hard-working, practical folks, and a lot of that kind of stuff, I mean, they're almost like show-me mentality, you know, as far as a lot of that is concerned.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
You don't have the exposure either that either the Americans do or the British. I mean, for us to get any shows or exposure on TV, it's three seasons late and between midnight and 5 a.m. type thing between the infomercials.
Mm-hmm.
So the exposure is not there. And there's a huge number of stereotypes that are
so because
still
of that
around.
That prevailing, or because of what you might perceive as that, is it more difficult to come by investigations? Are people
Absolutely.
More reticent to even want to disclose the fact that they think they may have some paranormal, so do you have to kind of tease it out of them sometimes? Or
yeah, a lot of times you do. We get a fair number of requests for information.
Mm-hmm.
We have a full information package. We not only send out online, but we'll send out a hard copy as well.
Mm-hmm.
It outlines all our procedures, you know, who we are, what we do, you know, all our procedures, policies, all that sort of thing, all the legal stuff. And even with all that, it's still, we very rarely get a response to it. We'll call back a couple times, but if the client doesn't show interest after that, you know, we're not going to hound them to death.
Yeah, I guess the sad thing about it is that if you got somebody who maybe, you know, have psychic abilities or maybe there's other issues going on there and they think that their house is haunted, it doesn't have much room or much of a comfort zone to really reach out to try to get somebody to either validate it rejected form, so that's got to be very tough for those folks. I imagine when they finally do come to you and finally do fess up, they're feeling very desperate.
A lot of them, well, I won't say a lot of them, a few of our clients are at their wits' end, and, you know, we're more than happy to help. We've got counseling experience, and that's good, and all that on our side too. So, you know, even if they don't have a lot of paranormal activity while we're there, we'll still counsel them, you know, sit down to the round table thing. And
uh-huh. How many folks do you have on your team?
We have six.
Uh-huh.
There's myself, four core members, and two additional members. We range from school teachers to government employees, technical engineers, structural engineers.
How would you characterize your approach to, take us through the steps, if you have them, as to how you would approach an investigation? So somebody calls, it's a legitimate, you know, call in terms of that they come out and investigate. So how does your group go about conducting its investigation?
We'll go, once we receive the initial contact, we get back to them within 24 hours. We'll conduct a phone interview to determine the mind, legitimacy, that sort of thing. Once the phone interview is conducted, we'll set up a date and time for a more formal sit-down interview. excuse me. We'll sit down with the client, find out, you know, again, do the personality questionnaire type thing. Find out exactly what's going on and where. Get a little bit of history if they know it, on time frames, that sort of thing. Once we go in for the actual investigation, that's when we the cameras, the recorders, you know, the standard stuff, EMF computers, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a sit down, ask questions type thing. We rely a lot on EVP. I'm the photo guy, mm-hmm. for the group, so my whole forte is photography.
Now, do you use infrared or do you use digital, or what's your preference?
We use digital for infrared for the video. I have used IR inside for still photography. I don't particularly care for it. It's just, it's real time consuming.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, and there's a greater chance of contamination with the extended shutter speeds. But I've got a full studio flash set that I like to use. It'll almost totally eliminates any contamination as far as airborne particles, that sort of thing.
That's good.
With off-camera flashes. If I use flashes, a lot of times I don't use flashes. There's enough ambient light, and I use, if there's only like a person in the room with me, they're sitting behind me, and I'm using longer exposures with ambient light. So there's no flash whatsoever.
Hmm. So one of the things that you were telling us about your team members, and I was going to ask you earlier, but tell us about your background too. You have an interesting background. You say your forte is digital or just photography, but you've got some training in that, right?
Yeah. I'm a serving member of the Canadian Forces. I've been now with them for 14 plus years now. Last years I've been with the military police branch. 4 years ago, I took over criminal investigation section with the military police branch downtown Ottawa here. Throughout my career, especially within the MP branch, I've had the opportunity to take training in forensic crime scene investigation, forensic photography, forensic video analysis, counterfeit analysis, crime scene reconstruction.
That must be of great benefit to you in your investigation.
It is. The way I like to do the investigation is I'll approach it like a crime scene.
Yeah.
And I'll, you know, all the photographs are, they're all panoramics. All the photographs are right to left, top to bottom, so if they need to be stitched together, they can be stitched together, and we can get a 3D, you know, a 360 panoramic of the room.
Wow, that's really interesting stuff. And how long has your group been together, Dave?
We've been together as a group for going on 2 years now. We were all members of another group prior to splitting and forming our own. We had a small difference of opinion, and that led to me parting ways. And the interest is still there. The interest, well, it's been there for years, and I think it always will be. So, you know, I was going to just spark out on my own and do the odd thing here and there. And next thing you know, there's team. Came call and said, you know what, we want to come with you. So,
well, in terms to summarize your own, or how would you characterize your own system of your belief system in terms of how you approach the paranormal investigation? I mean, would you consider yourself a believer or a skeptic? What do you think? That's a good question.
Oh, it is. I'm open-minded. I don't strongly believe, but I don't disbelieve either. This is hard to explain. I was waiting for this question, though. I think you have to have a certain amount of open-mindedness for this type of investigation. But again, by saying that, I'd like to reiterate that I approach paranormal investigations like I would approach a crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bias there. You have to go in, minded. The facts are the facts. If there's nothing there, there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do what you can. You record the evidence, and, you know.
Do you use psychics?
We don't. We're not opposed to the idea, but we've never used them in the past. No.
Well, the follow-up question I wanted to ask was, now that you've been, you know, so candid, and I think that your beliefs are similar to certainly to mine, and I'm pretty sure I can safely say that's been what we've kind of based our whole philosophy on, that kind of approach. What's been, in your years of investigating this, or in your personal experience, what's been the most compelling investigation or personal experience that you've had?
Oh, wow. We've had one investigation at a jail. Jail is, it's owned by this historical society now. It's been defunct, you know, for close to 50 years. It was built in the 1800s, seen lots of trauma.
I'll bet it's seen a lot of trauma.
Yeah. And back in the day, they housed children there as well, mentally ill children.
Uh-huh.
They locked them away with the inmates and anybody, you know, the women as well, if they found the women were mentally unstable, all in the same institution. Anyways, we spent some time down in solitary confinement. There was two investigators in the solitary confinement cell with a digital audio recorder and a separate video recorder outside the cell filming down a hallway. Now, during the line of questioning, you could kind of hear the investigators inside the cell on the video recorder, but, you know, with the cell door closed, solid core steel cell door, it was fairly muffled.
Mm-hmm.
Their line of questioning was something like along the lines of, you know, "Are you here?" They were focusing on a little boy spirit that is believed to be there. His name is Matthew. And her female investigators were saying, "Matthew, are you here?" And on the voice recorder, you can clearly hear a small child's voice going, "I'm scared."
Really?
And on the video recorder, you could hear it as well, slightly muffled, as if it was coming from inside the... Now, with that said, there was no video. You know, I have to go back to, you know, my skeptical side. There was no video inside the jury confinement at the time. But I'm 99.99% that it was neither one of the investigators that was in the cell. Just the nuance, the whole tone of it, Yeah, it was a child's voice.
And Doug and I have talked many times about he has a very compelling EVP, and you know, one of the things that we just kicked around and still to this day blows my mind is the nature of the EVP itself, how it's in a very sing-songy type of the cadence is all off, and yet it's so weird. Yeah, it's very compelling.
Yeah. Like, I've run this through forensic audio programs, and it's one of those things where you hear it, the hair on your arm sticks up, the hair on the back of your neck stands up, and, you know, you're done. You're looking at each other going, you know, wow.
Yeah, where did that come from?
That's cool, you know.
Yeah.
Can we validate it?
Interesting stuff. So, there's a question from Sharon in the chat room. So much wilderness area in Canada. Where are you finding activity there?
A lot of it is on the West Coast, from my understanding. I'm not so much into the whole crypto side of the deal. There's a fair amount of interesting individuals within the city itself. Yeah, but. Most of the Canadian cryptid stuff is happening on the West Coast.
Vancouver and those areas.
Yeah, Vancouver up in the Rockies, where it's more. There was apparently a UFO that crashed into the Ottawa River here a couple weeks back. Having a hard time with that one in particular, but
you're having a hard time with it.
Yeah, there was a fireworks festival going on.
Oh,
it's just there's.
Well, wasn't there some new some guys that were going the completely the opposite direction? I think wasn't there some guys going back to what is it, the Shag Harbor up there, where they were going to try to get that machine rolling again, or some new divers up there that we? I thought I'd stumble across something the other day. Have you heard anything about that, Dave?
No, I haven't. No.
Well, I keep looking for it. I thought I had seen someplace where somebody's trying to organize new divers to go up there and reignite the site, but my goodness, that was a long time ago. So
yeah, it was.
I don't know what, if anything,
was that the
70s? At least 20, yeah, maybe longer, yeah.
Oh, I'd like to. I have to look that up now.
Yeah, Shag Harbor USOs, unidentified submerged objects. So, do you guys do anything with UFOs? Per se, or
we haven't. We would, and we will. We haven't received any requests for information on it, though. That's something that I definitely am interested in. And after reading up on some of the stuff and becoming a member of Parent Access and getting into it a little more, it's got my interest. And it's something there's just so many avenues that you can take on and run on. I said before the show, I've got like four different articles and most on the go at the same time.
Yeah, you got some. Well, I don't know what you call it there, Freedom of Information Act, or some declassified documents.
I've happened across some declassified documents from the Ministry of Defense that a British colleague of mine was nice enough to share. There's like 4,000 plus pages of British UFO reports.
Is that the one they recently released, Dave?
Yeah.
About 2 months ago. You know, the thing that I found that was so disappointing about that was when the major medias got a hold of that, they immediately focused on one of the most ridiculous-looking things in there, like an alien with a banana head, and what it did was, in effect, it discounted all the reports. It kind of made all the reports look silly, and then they also topped it off by saying that, well, you have to remember that the year that we had the most was the year that the movie about the invasion. I'm trying to remember the Smith in it.
Independence Day.
Independence Day. So they said, so they're trying to make this, establish this link that, look, there are a bunch of people all hopped up on a movie and they could have seen anything in the sky. And then, you know, to top it off by that, and what I found so disappointing about it, and hopefully your friend can give more information, is that there were probably a lot of legitimate reports that were made.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's the full report from Rendlesham Forest.
Oh.
Boy, that one always, you know, the case has an evolution in itself.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you guys say? I mean, there's always something after all this time, which well over 20 years ago, there's always a new revelation about Rendlesham Forest.
Yeah. No, interesting case.
Driving so what did your friend tell you, Dave?
He's not really saying too much. He just more or less said, you know, they recently released them. I have copies. Are you interested in reading them?
Yeah.
Of course, me being me.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah. Duh.
Like, duh.
Back right now, right?
So, like, 18 hours of downloads later.
Yeah, really.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you're gonna post some of those on Paranexus, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, all the more reason for people to join Paranexus.
That's
so
right.
I could resist.
I haven't gotten to them. I've just been kind of skimming them right now, just to pick out some.
You haven't read all 4,000 pages? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, you
know. It's between having a letter, it's hard to find time, you know.
There you go. Well, it's interesting stuff. I'm sure there's, you know, more than one account that doesn't have an alien with a head like a banana in it
absolutely.
Something that was heavily influenced by Independence Day, which is really a shame. Do you think the Canadian media is just as bad as the American for discounting any kind of UFO activity or being in a complete rush to discredit the person who reports what they might have seen?
Absolutely. There was an interesting case in Montreal. Oh, I forget time frame. It wasn't all that long ago. I'm going to say within the last 5 years. A woman was in a pool at a hotel. She looks up, sees this big bright light in the sky. She's not sure what it is. She asks the lifeguard, you know, what's that light up there? Lifeguard's not sure. Lifeguard goes, gets the security guard. Security know where it is. Calls the cops. Calls 911. A bunch of police officers show up. They don't know what it is. Media, I think MUFON investigated it. I'm not sure. But a couple days later, it was a big thing in the newspaper the next day. A couple days later, they came out and said it was high-intensity halogen light on the construction site across the road. Several investigations later determined no, that wasn't actually the fact. The lights weren't on that night to begin with. So it was a whole different location, whole different intensity. So, you know, you've got the media doing that, which doesn't help. It's the whole Hollywood stigmatism.
Yeah, and it's really a shame. You know, there seems to be, and it almost sounds, without sounding like, you know, a wigged out person that's, you know, all fired up and addicted to conspiracies, it almost seems like, you know, that they're all in collusion, all these major governments, in terms of what they do know or what they might possibly know. And maybe you guys will agree with me, I've kind of boiled it down to one or two things. It's either that they do know what's going on, and they're in on something, or number two, they don't know what's going on and nobody else going on, and so they're trying to keep a lid on it. And it just seems like the whole process of instantly making something into a joke in the public, you know, it has been a really good way of containing and keeping something, you know, in the shadows that we all should probably know about, or at least be party to the fact that our governments know something about.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, in a logical manner, you've got the British over there declassifying documents, and they're freely admitting, yes, we investigate reports of UFOs from a defense standpoint. You know, fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
They've got strange lights in the skies over their military establishments. They want to find out what those lights are. Fair enough. Now, no other government in the world has admitted the same thing. Okay, so there's something. I generally don't go with the whole conspiracy theory thing, but for one government to say, yeah, sure, we investigate from some standpoint, and everybody else going, it's a weather balloon.
Yeah, and it's almost like, well, the Belgians, you know, released tape years ago, they came out not too long ago. Several other countries have been much more open than, you know, the United States or some of the other Western powers, and it's just like, yeah, you know, why are we playing our cards so close to our chest?
Yeah.
Now, the other thing is that I also find very plausible, I'm sure you guys will, excuse me, it was like back in the 60s and the late 50s when, you know, the United States and our allies were running those U-2 aircraft. Many of them are reported as UFOs or strange things in the night sky, and the CIA was perfectly content to let people think that they were UFOs. They saw it as a good cover activity for, you know, overflights.
Yeah.
And yeah, they let exactly. people buy into it.
Well, speaking of whistleblowing, you know, are you familiar, Dave, with your former defense minister there, Paul Hillier? Or Hillier?
Yeah.
With his coming out?
Rick Hillier.
Is
that was
Rick?
A pretty courageous thing to do that he did.
He was, as far as Chief of Defense Task go, he was switched on. I had a lot of respect for that man. And
yeah,
because
he was an insider too.
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard some of his speeches, but I mean, he came out with some stuff, right? I mean, it's been a bit since I've heard some of what he talked about, but.
Well, I think he pretty much verified. He said there are UFOs, and you know, we don't know a lot about them. And but don't let anybody. We're not, you know, they can't. There's been a cover up, a long term cover up, and they were a part of it. So, but when you look at it like you were talking about, Dave, from a defense thing, you know, I mean, yeah. You're going to want to know, and what would make a stout military person shiver in their boots would be the fact that if it has greater capabilities than any of our aircraft or any of our technology, how do you defend against something like that? So I would imagine,
exactly. Yeah,
I would imagine that our armed forces, regardless of what country you're in, are damned interested in anything that violates airspace and scramble jets quite frequently for if and when these things do occur. And they may be just as puzzled as we are.
Definitely.
Which is kind of scary in itself. Especially when these things violate our airspace. When you think of the number of times...
So freely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, like these huge, gigantic triangles flying at low levels. You'd think they'd be crawling receptors. And I think in those cases, that's got to be some kind of something we know about. I know that's pretty vague, but it seems to me like when they're that blatant flying over, you'd think that everybody would pick something up on radar or they know that something in that airspace.
Sometimes not.
True enough, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what they do or different cultures or what. So, Dave, what about, you know, what are some of the things that you've learned over the years, you know, especially from your unique perspective of forensic photography, police work, you know, approaching an investigation, you know, as a criminal scene? What are some of the things that you've picked up and learned that are perhaps unique that you could share with
other investigators.
Okay, let's see. It's reaching to my bag of tricks here and see what we sort.
Yeah.
Like I say, from photography, from the photography standpoint, say I'm a big advocate of panoramas. Love stitching pictures together. It puts everything into perspective, especially for people that, if I'm presenting evidence to a client, I'm presenting it as if I was going into a courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
All of the who, what, where, why, when, and how is answered, and I'm ready to face a lawyer, mm-hmm. a defense attorney. So the pictures, they're stitched together as if I can show a person that has never been in the court what that room looks like.
From all angles.
From all angles, like I say, all my pictures are identical, left to right, and top to bottom. They're all in multiples of three.
What do you mean by that? You mean the stitched photographs, or?
No, stitched photographs, I'll take, you know, one of each and stitch them together as far as the panoramic and the 360s go. But I take three pictures, I'll have my camera set on continuous,
mm-hmm.
and it'll be snap, snap, snap. Then I'll relocate the camera, snap, snap, snap. Relocate the camera, snap, snap, snap. If you're taking pictures at night, make sure you use a tripod. Flash or not, doesn't matter. I'm a big advocate of that and shutter release. Nobody can say you're touching the camera.
Yeah.
Plus
you avoid the energy, the light streaks, the energy rods.
Exactly.
The camera is on a stable base.
Yeah. You're standing away from it. Videotape yourself taking pictures.
Mm.
That way, if there is a visual anomaly in the picture, someone can say, camera shake. You can go back with the video and say, no camera shake. Here's the time the time setting. You know, it's...
That's a great idea, though.
Cover your ass.
But that's a terrific idea, though, and I don't think a lot of people think about that. And if you've got somebody there where you can kind of position them with whatever anomaly might show up, that's a much better position to be in.
Yeah.
When you're trying to either replicate it or say that you know, when you capture that anomaly, they certainly can't say that that person was responsible for it.
No.
Yeah, great idea. Great idea, Dave. Keep going.
If there is somebody else in the room, make sure they're on the video as well. I keep track of, I don't want people in my pictures, per se, unless, you know, I see something that can be compared to a human form, you know, clear or something. But generally, I don't like people in my pictures. That way, I don't have anything contaminating my pictures, but I'll keep the video.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that's in the room has to be on video, and there has to be an audio log with their voice on it. So when they walk in, they'll announce, you know, so-and-so, Joe Bloggins, you know, entering the room at the time,
mm-hmm.
the date, that sort of thing. Again, it's a cover your butt thing.
That's
that
good.
Way. You always have video logs of who was where. I like to keep track of everybody. I know where everybody is. It might seem like micromanagement, but less contamination.
No,
it's the happier I am.
Yeah, it's a scientific approach. You've got to control your environment. You've got to control the lab, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we can never lose sight of that, though. That's important, and I think, you know, as you're pointing out so well, as you're illustrating here, is that you got to be focused. You can't lose sight of that.
No.
You've got to maintain it.
When you lose sight of it, that's when you're either going to miss stuff or people aren't going to take you serious.
And it's hard work.
exactly. I include the clients as well. That way I know where they are. I mean, who better knows the activity than the client?
Right.
Absolutely.
So you bring them into the room, you sit them down in front of a video camera with an investigator, you know, start asking your questions. Anything that you wanted to ask, ask away. You know, talk to the spirit or entity or whatever you believe is here as if it were a family member.
Mm-hmm.
And fire away.
Yeah, excellent suggestions, man. So what else would you recommend, if anything, to investigators, perhaps new investigators, or to help investigators step it up a notch? I mean, some excellent suggestions there on controlling your research environment, taking 3 pictures of the panorama.
Yeah, personally, I feel it's all about controlling the environment. There's too many. How do I word this as politically correct? There's too many out there of entertainment value that a lot of people take seriously.
Well, a lot do. I mean, what you say is true. A lot of people were trained on how to read simply by watching TV shows, and you know, TV shows are there for the dramatic effect.
Yes. Yes. I've yet to have any spooky music come up halfway through my investigations, or you know,
yeah,
or trip over a cameraman. But excuse me, you know what I mean? There's, you know, there's a lot of people out there that needs to be taken with a grain of salt. There's so much other information out there that's so valuable. You know, people don't think to.
Well, don't you think too, though, Dave, that nature of the paranormal, when it may occur, that it may be so so fleeting. That number one, of course, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but guys, that it'll be number one difficult to record. But when it happens, it's going to be so out of the ordinary and extraordinary that, you know, it's going to be something that's going to be a brief duration. Now that's and having not seen anything that would be that, you know, of that magnitude, that's the way I kind of think it would happen. So therefore, I guess the reason why I bring that up is, if you're going to a home and doing an investigation and there is something there that of a paranormal nature, I'm just concerned that at times that maybe it recedes when we come in.
Yeah, that's something that I've tossed around a lot too.
Sharon just asked a question in the chat room. I always wonder whether the presence of cameras and all that are causing these things to hide.
Yeah, well, right on, Sharon, because you're probably correct.
You know,
and, you know, how many times have you been on an investigation date where, you know, you come up with inconclusive results and the family members are adamant that something's there, can't spend every night of the week with them as much as, you know, you wish your schedule and your time would permit, because you may be there 24 hours after you've been there, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, we've contacted our clients, you know, a day or two later for follow-up just to see, you know, make sure things are going smooth and everything. And, you know, they'll say, you know, a couple hours after you guys left, it started to pick up again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, leads you to believe we're the interlopers, you know, we're the strangers coming in the house with all this fancy stuff that, if you think about it, this person died in 1842 or whatever. Okay. Have little boxes with red lights on it back then.
Yeah.
They didn't have these little fancy gizmos that shoot out bright flashes and can see in the dark. And, you know, I'd be a little standoffish too.
Well, you know, one time, and Doug, I'm sure Doug remembers this, we were on an investigation in the Ocala area, and we a lot of our psychics were picking up on a guy who was not from that time frame, maybe in the 20s or the 30s or something. And his to us was, "Are you guys Haints?" You remember that, Doug? That's what the psychics are telling us, because that's how he supposedly put us.
Yeah, that we were the ghosts, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny.
And it's funny because one of the psychics was not familiar with that term. That's the old term, and she said, "You know, he keeps asking us if we're Haints. What the hell's a Haint?"
Yeah, that's funny. Good stuff. So, all right. So, interesting stuff. And, you know, and this just underscores the fact that, honestly, to do an investigation, you don't absolutely have to have all that stuff. I mean, we all started out with a DVR system and all that stuff, and that's cool. And this is something that we've been talking about on previous shows, and, you know, reinventing the field and taking a different look at cameras and video and all that. Yeah, it's, you got to document your area, and yes, continue to take your photos and video and all that. The thing is though that sometimes when you go on an investigation, the best tool that you can take is your own unbiased mind and perhaps an audio recorder.
Between your ears.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that I think is the most important.
Your powers of observation and your ability to share those with other people are seeing what's going on. Big, big part of doing a proper investigation.
It makes a difference. You know, you may not look so bad, or, you know, they may not recess or hide. You know, just,
and the thing I found too is, okay, when I got into active investigations, you know, eBay was my friend. It got ridiculous. And after a couple of investigations with all this, you know, fancy stuff, I sat down and thought about it and went, you know what? I'm spending more time on this equipment, making sure it's running, making sure it's still running,
and
making
sure
it's still
running
properly. What the hell am I doing? I'm not focusing on the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, employ the KISS principle here a little
mm-hmm.
bit,
mm-hmm.
To keep it simple, stupid, and, you know, reevaluate. And we should, you know, yeah, okay, we use laptops. That's more for instant review than anything else. But, you know, camera, video camera with the DIR. We have our IR extender lights, which is about as fancy as we go now. A couple EMF detectors and audio.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it just doesn't have to be a big thing.
It doesn't have to be a multi.
Well, that move too. We made that move a couple years ago, Dave, and we went from having like 4 to 5 people to now basically have 3 or 4 at the very most. And we take a very quiet approach and a very laid-back approach when we do our interview. And, you know, we may have each person has their specific task. And, you know, we and I'm sure you guys employ the same techniques because, you know, what Doug and I have found, and Gregory, when he's participated in the investigations with us, is we get so much information by having 2 people there doing the initial interview that it's astounding. And if you just employ all of your best listening skills, you will be amazed, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, as to what you'll find out. A lot of times, investigation goes no further than that basic...
Yeah, the initial interview.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you there.
It's the cornerstone and foundation of the whole investigation.
Yeah.
Everything hinges on it.
I can't tell you how many cases I've resolved over the phone with the initial call. You know,
yeah.
Coaching them, explaining them how to view spirits, view them as people, you know, just like you would a human being, nothing to do. Take your power back.
Exactly. Empowerment.
Yep. Hold your boundaries, and just like you would with any other human being. And people are saying, oh really? I guess I hadn't looked at it that way. And I'm thinking, yeah, you look at it that way. A stranger off the street walked in and started moving things around.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly. Yeah.
You know, what are you doing here? This is my home. This is my domain. You don't belong. Get out.
Yeah.
So, interesting stuff. Now we're down to the last 4 minutes or so. Some great suggestions, Dave. And for those of you who have joined us late, Dave is our new newsletter editor for Paranexus, and last couple of issues he's put out, and it's just continuing to get better and evolving. So if you would like to submit some, maybe your best practices, and that reminds me of another thing I'll talk about in just a sec. What techniques do you use? Now, some people have been seeing some of this stuff in the chat room, and some good suggestions, and perhaps we'll do a post. Maybe Dave can do that on Paranexus on best practices. If you want to get them in the newsletter, techniques you're using that you want to shift other investigators. And speaking of best practices, Grant and I were really talking about this radio program yesterday and came up with some ideas that we want to implement. And one of those is a best practices show each month. And I mean, I think that would be a great idea to, you're an investigator and you want to come on the program, we'd love to have you. You know, we might invite a couple of our members or anybody really to come and share what you're doing. So if you have an interest in that, get a hold of Grant, or you can send an email to admin@paranexus.org.
Yeah, don't be shy about it, folks, because, you know, we welcome you to, we encourage you to come onto the show, and the group does something different. Or maybe you have a compelling case that you want to talk about, or maybe, as Doug just talked about, you have a best practice that you'd like to share with all of us. Because when you do that and you participate, everybody benefits.
Mm-hmm. And other quick announcements. If I mentioned one of these at the outset, and there's more information on paranexus.org that I posted, plus in the newsletter, in that we are in the process of incorporating as a nonprofit and taking the next leap upward here. And we're really encouraging folks that want to join in on this to come on and join and be visible in the forums, and, you know, let us get to know you, share your stuff. Because over the next, you're going to be looking at adding some more board members, but we need people. We need good, grounded, solid people. And Scott, we do have quite a few forum members. I announced about 3 weeks ago that we were discontinuing the free forum membership. So if you happen to be listening to this in a timely manner and you're a forum member but not a paid member, you'll want to convert that to a paid membership by next week. I think the 15th is the end. Otherwise, those accounts are just going to have to get rid of them, because we're going to an all-membership type of a format. And we really encourage you to come in. I mean, you can join Paranexus for $39 a year, $4.50 a month. I mean, think about it. That's a bunch of McDonald's. It's a pack of smokes. It's, you know, a movie rental. It's not much. And it really helps, because that's our primary source of running Paranexus is memberships, right? Once we get the nonprofit tax exemption, we'll be able to apply for some grants and hopefully get them. But we really encourage you to come and take a look. Plus, don't forget the fake a photo contest. I didn't mention that. More information on Paranexus. We, you know, give it a shot. I mean, it's going to be a great contest. It's going to be a lot of fun. But more importantly, it's going to be a great educational experience in showing how some of these things were done. And there's going to be some prizes as well as a public winner. Like, you can actually have a hand in choosing one of those winners by rating their photos once we start getting some in. But that ends on October 22nd, and then we will have the second place winners on our show, our Halloween show, on October 29th. Dave, thanks so much for all that you're doing, and thanks so much for being on our program tonight.
Well, you're very welcome, and thanks for having me. It was great being here.
It's a real pleasure to have you with us, and we look forward to working with you and having you back on the show again. So.
Yeah, and folks in our chat room and those who have listened to us live, we really appreciate it. We thank Mr. E for streaming on his website, and we hope to see you next week on our show. Take care, everybody. Good night.
Have a great weekend. Good night, everybody.
for night.